cults over here.
Cults over there.
There are cults
everywhere.
And we're going to tell you all about it with a fairy tale twist.
Welcome to
Once Upon a Cult.
Once upon a time, there was trigger warning.
So many trigger warnings.
If you are uncomfortable with rape, with child rape, child molestation,
torture, and basically just no human rights being given to anyone,
then this is not the episode for you.
But if you like that kind of thing, boy, are you in the right spot.
Boy, you came to the... Wow. I feel like a horrible person. Hi, welcome to Once Upon a Cult.
We have to laugh to stop the pain.
I know. Today we are looking into Colonia Dignidad, our Colony of Dignity, which was run by Paul Schaefer.
Yes. Yeah. The best.
Thanks, Rachel.
Person. You guys, you're so welcome. I just saw a weird little preview for a movie that's like a fictional account, but based on the movie, and it looked really cool to me. So I was like, oh, this is a real life thing. We should look into it. It sounds positively fun.
Yes.
It's not positively fun at all.
So, and I know I said Zendik Farms 2 weeks in a row now.
I know everyone out there is very upset with us.
Yes. But we actually have a cool thing in the works. We may actually be interviewing somebody who is at Zendik Farms. So that's why it's on hiatus for the moment. And I don't want to promise anything yet because it's not finalized. But yeah, it's looking good.
Yeah.
Looking good.
Worth putting on hold for
worth
a little bit
wait.
To see if that can come through.
Yes. So
so in the meantime, we're like, what other fun, brilliant thing can we bring to you?
So I thought I wanted to tell a story.
Oh, yeah.
It's a light story just to kind of show you what kind of person Paul Schaefer is, but like without all the other stuff he did. Kind of a funny, terrible story.
Right.
And I want to give a huge shout out to Coffee and Cults, another podcast, because this is where I heard this story and I kind of found it in my research, but they did a very good research on that show. So, yeah, listen to them if you get a chance. But so. Paul got mad.
He seemed to get mad often.
He gets mad often.
Yeah.
He got mad that the children had such a love for Santa Claus. Why must they love Santa Claus?
No one can be loved more than him.
No one can be loved more than him.
This is not okay.
So naturally, Paul decided, hey, I'm going to get one of my inner circle Nazi friends to dress as Santa Claus. And he will come up on a raft to wish all the kids Merry Christmas. So this beautiful scene of Santa Claus coming up on a raft, and then Paul taking out a gun and shooting Santa Claus in front of the children.
What? Like, did he shoot the guy for real?
I
wouldn't be surprised.
I'm thinking the guy had some sort of, it wasn't specified, but I think he had like a bulletproof vest or something because he fell in the water, washed down a little ways, got out of the water, got out of the suit, and then showed up with everybody else. So he's okay, unless it was just a flesh wound.
Wow.
So this is who we're talking about today.
Like, how... How did, like, knowing that the kids all loved him so much, like, what did he say when all the children, like, just looked at him with tears in their eyes, like, Paul Schaefer, what have you done?
But it was his way of showing that nobody is above Paul, like, he is the ultimate god.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. See, you got the right attitude, oh my god.
Wow.
So, yeah, if you're, like, Easter Bunny, you better watch out.
Yeah. You better hope these kids don't like you too much.
No.
Lose a tooth, get the fuck out of there.
Tooth fairy? No.
Yeah. We're not safe here.
Not safe.
Hide.
Oh, hi, I'm Sean.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Alan. And I'm Santa Claus.
Bang. <Boom. laughs> It's really funny because one of the co-hosts on on Coffee and Colt started being like doing lines from Christmas movies. And then bang, bang.
Everyone go listen to it. Everybody, it's amazing. Great. All right. Well, so Paul Schaefer. It's where it all begins. Paul Schaefer Schneider. Apparently had two last names, but maybe he didn't like that second last name as much because then he just went by Paul Schaefer for forever.
Mm-hmm.
He was born December 4th, 1921. And fair warning, I do not speak German, so I'm sure there will be many mispronunciations of places.
Well, as someone who's 53.8% German.
Oh.
So you can speak it 58.3%.
Just wait until we do a Poland episode.
It's on.
And I do it even worse.
I don't know German.
But yes, so he was born in Troisdorf.
Troisdorf, yeah.
Germany, yeah. And I love, like, the random information that was put out there, which is so weird to me. Like, apparently, he was a poor and clumsy student.
Yeah.
Well, that sucks. And his family was actually Lutheran, so they weren't extremists. They were normal religious Christians. They were Lutheran.
And yeah.
Sounds like I like Lutheran religion. Good for them. And apparently, in an accident with a fork, he lost his right eye.
That's how clumsy he is.
Yeah, apparently.
Such a clumsy student.
I don't even understand fully how this works. He had tied his shoelaces too tight, and he took the fork to try to, like, untie it.
Oh, no.
And it, like, flung into his
eyeball. Oh, no.
I like how Rachel and I both put our hands
I have to protect my eyeball from these imagined injuries.
But his story is he lost his eye in the war, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Because clearly it would not be befitting of a godlike figure to be clumsy with a fork and just stabbing his own eye out.
I forked myself.
Yes. And so during World War II, he was a medic with the German forces. And being on the German side during World War II... That also makes him a Nazi. One thing I do want to point out about this is many of the German people that went to this colony were Nazis. But you also have to think about how that time in Germany, like, almost everyone was a Nazi at that time. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even necessarily because they always believed in it or anything. It's just, like, if you were in Germany at that time, you were part of the Nazi youth, you were part of the Nazi thing. So we don't see, even though it like gets brought up a lot that, oh, they were Nazis, there's actually not a lot of the things that they do, I think, that are related to the Nazi ideals. But I definitely think there are things that relate to them kind of being in a war and being with a group of people known for torture and stuff like that. So like this group isn't anti-Jewish or anything like that. Just
okay.
Pointing that out.
I hope like, we make this joke sometimes watching things, but at what point do you realize I'm the villain?
I have my scar now. I've started my villain era.
Yeah. Like, he is a glass-eyed, ex-German, child molester, torturer. Like, you don't get much worse than that.
I'm pretty sure he's God. Pretty sure. Like, all signs point to God, definitely.
Yeah. Jeez.
But yes, and following the war, he served as a young people's leader for the Evangelical Free Church. So he's had a shift in his religion. Automatically, I'm seeing some red flags go up. He's now getting into the evangelical faith, and I feel like that's where things start to go a little off the deep end. No longer a safe Lutheran, is he? but yes, in 1945 was when he started doing that. And he was known for being very charismatic and just working great with the youth. But then at the same time, it seemed like almost an unspoken thing where people also knew, because they were, like, on site with children, with young boys, and he would have young boys come to his room at night.
There's a really awkward pause right there.
No! He would have young boys come to his room at night.
There we go.
And Like, he even had someone that was kind of, like, working under and with him, like, walk in one time and see him in bed with a boy, like, lying there together. And she was just like, there wasn't anything wrong with that. That was just...
That's so weird.
Yeah, I don't understand. Well, like, it's obviously a different time, but I don't understand.
And even 5 years earlier, 1940, when he was working at the... He was a welfare worker for the church. That's when the allegations of molestation even started. He was only 19 years old. Ooh. And he's already being caught with boys.
Yes. And so... Although he was charismatic and had a lot of followers, he was suddenly let go, suddenly fired, due to the fact that there were rumors beginning to spread about his behavior with the young boys. So at this point, he became a traveling preacher and singer.
Oh, good.
Yay! Going and spreading the word. And as we mentioned, evangelical. Was where he was leaning, and he started to follow the teachings of William M. Branham. And I don't know, we probably brought this up, I mean, this was before my time, but Jim Jones was a big fan.
Yeah, so I have a great list. I went down a rabbit hole
of Branham. Find all the ones that have to do with this?
Well, so he claimed to have been a prophet anointed by Elijah.
Yes.
And he's also very famous for the time. This is in, like, the 1950s for his charismatic preaching.
And he was a faith healer.
Woo! He was also a major influence on the televangelist movement and was known as one of the first Americans to get to go preach in Europe. So he was a big deal.
Yeah.
But the problem... is he was also known as a doomsday cultist.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So he very much was about this is the last day. And like Rachel said, he influenced Jim Jones,
mm-hmm.
Paul Schaefer,
mm-hmm.
Robert Martin Gumbura, which I didn't know that name, mm-hmm. and Leo Mercer, which I do know that name, and I don't know why, but he was a cult leader.
I mean, it's a good bunch of guys.
Good bunch of people there.
Definitely. Great religion going on there, I'm sure. But yeah, and his teachings also, it was a lot of strict adherence to the Bible, women as subservient, racial purity, and end of times, where a lot of the big focus is going on. And during one of his campaigns across Europe and Germany, that's when Schaefer got to meet him in person.
Oh.
And learn from him in person, and they became buddies. So good. So after being a traveling preacher for a bit, clearly the next thing that this guy, Paul Schaefer, wanted to do in 1953 was set up a children's home and orphanage where he welcomed a lot of the war widows and their children. And we know he's not doing this to help the mothers. We know him drawing in children is a definitely different reason. And so he was doing that. He also had started, the Private Social Mission, which was a charitable organization. But in 1959, he actually did get charged for sexually abusing two young boys. But before they could arrest them, he was in the wind. He fled. And first, he started kind of traveling all over the world for a bit. Like, he was in Egypt, he was in Syria, he was going all over the place, but not back to Germany because he knew he could be arrested the minute he went back there. So basically, he was on the lam. And at one point, he had met the ambassador of Chile while he was still in Germany, and so had created a relationship with this man. And in 1961... off to Chile he goes. And it wasn't just him. As he went around and, like, was abroad in all these locations, he actually had a handful, not even more than a handful, like, I think they said even sometimes, like around 100 followers going to these different places with him because they trusted him above everything else. They really saw him as an amazing teacher and preacher, and they felt taken care of with him. So after World War II, a lot of these people were in Germany. They were German people. So they're dealing with poverty, with famine, with having to rebuild, with having a lot of negative German sentiment around. So clearly, this person that is there and is giving you an option to follow, like, God's path and feel like chosen people of God, and you think he's amazing, they followed him. Yeah. They went with him over to Europe and to the Middle East, and eventually to Chile.
Yeah, I mean, one of the also driving factors, too, is with William Branham, he felt that, like, the Western countries are going to end of the world for the Western countries as well, too. So it's like that was another driving force to drive him to South America.
Yeah, he said Western democracies would fail, which I thought that was funny. Like, how does that inspire you to move from somewhere that's not Western to someone that's not Western?
Interesting.
But maybe it's the idea of the democracy, because UK's bigger on that.
Well, I think there's also, like, the nuclear scare, too, going on, so, yeah. He also thought that Ellie was going to go underwater.
I mean, we all know that is eventually going to happen, and we're just waiting for that big one.
And then Rachel, Al, and I will sprout our gills and return to our Lemurian brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
Hey, Namir, what's up? So, and a big driving force here is, this is never really said in the research, but I feel like he moves just basically whenever he's outed as a child molester. Like, that seems to be the major thing ruling over his life. Mm-hmm. Where can I go where they don't know what I'm doing to these boys or don't care?
At least, until he found the place where it didn't matter if he was a child molester and everyone would just look the other way.
Yeah. And what's really a little frightening to me is, because it's funny, Alan and I watched a movie called Colonia. It's a fictionalized history with Emma Watson and Daniel Brühl, who we know as
the German guy.
The German guy in the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
He was Zemo in the Civil War and also in Falcon and Winter Soldier. But it's a fictionalized drama about them going to Colony of Dignidad. And when you see the man who plays Schaefer in the movie, he's scary.
Yeah.
He's got long, scary hair. He's like the scary Germany villain in the Mission Impossible movies, the later ones. So when you see that, you're like, oh, yeah, this guy's definitely a child molester.
Definitely.
But when you see his pictures, the real-life pictures of Paul Schaefer, he looks like a sweet little grandpa. Like, he does not look like a scary person at all.
With one eye.
With one eye.
That's the clincher. Can't trust those ones with one eye.
Yeah. I don't trust your brother.
I don't either.
So, yeah. So he moves over to... We're in Chile now, right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So he moved to Gronau. Is that how you say it? Gronau? Where he once again worked with children at risk. And then he starts to put together this community where, oh, this is weird. It's almost like Cults for Dummies once more, because he has his people working 16-hour days of hard labor.
Yeah.
But it's all right. They get a like,
they get taken care
of. They get a break day.
Oh, they get a break day.
Once a year.
Thank God.
They don't have to work 16 hours one day a year.
But probably not on Christmas.
Fuck you, Santa.
Yeah. And so he had them starting to build now this colony, this place where they're going to be farming and kind of be a little bit, like, self-sufficient. Like, people learned crafts like metalwork. Mm-hmm. And, like, everyone didn't have their own pay. Like, everyone brought all their savings and money that they had together into one central way, and then everyone was supported from there. So it was like, yeah, you just do your work and you'll be taken care of.
Yeah.
Like, don't worry about having personal belongings. Don't worry about, like, having your own home. Like, when they first went over, he did give them an idea of that they would all, after they built the main area, they would be able to then focus on creating, like, homes for them to be in. But when they got to that point, they were like, this is working really good, you guys. Like,
yeah.
Do we need to not be in barracks? I think this communal living is great. It's real good.
Yeah, and plus, like, if you don't have belongings, you have nowhere to go except for here.
Yes. And early on, they started separating male from female.
Yeah.
And really stopping interactions.
Okay. In 1961 is when molestation charges came up in Granal, and that's when they moved to Chile. Oh. So apparently a lot of his followers, they liked living this way, so they actually went with him to Chile, but a lot stayed behind. But luckily, just like Jim Jones, a lot of the followers were like, I can't move with you, but I'd like to keep paying you.
I mean, they gotta support their God on Earth.
They've like, got to.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
But yeah, sorry. Now you may continue, because we are in Chile, finally.
Now we are in Chile. But, yeah, so they really built out this compound, and kind of around this time, there was also a shift happening in Chile where the Marxist Party was kind of getting, like, a lot of support under it. They were kind of for the people. And
like Harpo Marx?
Yes. I don't know what sounds he makes. Is he silent?
So I'll just doesn't make silent. Any ha-ha.
Dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. But yes, so he used this excuse for the fact that there was this, like, leftist party that was gaining traction to then also bring it up a level. They weren't just building, like, a nice farmstead to be at. They started, like, laying barbed wire.
Oh.
They were building fences around themselves. They fenced their own selves in by building out, like, basically ways for them to keep the outside world out from where they are.
Yeah. Yeah, he even started, which is interesting, but they even smuggled weapons from Germany as well, too. It was just very, like, a fort. Like, they were trying to keep something out, away.
Yeah, one thing I heard is when he finally does get caught, they found more weapons than, like, Chile had ever had. Like, they had an insane amount of weapons.
Well, and they actually were the ones that were supplying weapons as well.
Wow.
Like, it wasn't just the ones they had there. I mean, this comes later, but because they had become all very talented in all these different crafts, they had metal workers on site, and they had brought guns in and took it all apart and then learned how to make the gun. So they, like, kind of brought in, like, okay, here's the gun, and then all their metal workers were able to, like, were so good and so talented and meticulous, and they were able to then start making weapons on site to then provide that to the Chilean government, which isn't quite their friend yet, because right now the Marxists, the leftists, are in power, and, like, this was the people voted for it. This wasn't a communist revolution. This was what the people wanted. But as dictators like to exist, that did not last for long.
Nope. Yeah. And around this time, too, it looked like he started abusing children with, like, electric shock therapy to keep them more in line as well, too. So this is more, like, the abuses that we'll learn more with, like, the prisoners that they took in as well, too. But I feel like this is where it started.
Yeah, it was a very sad thing where, like, whatever boy was performing the best or caught Paul's eye would be invited to spend the night in Paul's room with him.
Ooh.
And everybody kind of knew what was going on, but it was almost worse not to just let him have his way, because if they didn't agree to sleep in his room, they would be tortured. They would electroshock therapy, like you said. They would
drug them, too.
They'd be drugged with very dangerous drugs. So this is like a pick-your-poison type thing, which is very sad. Should I tell the Santa story again to lighten the mood?
No, it reminds me of the one-armed man in Arrested Development.
And that's why you don't drink milk in the car.
That's why.
So, so this gets pretty crazy because Paul being the smart, evil, charismatic 007 villain he is, he sees reason right away to separate any familial or any, like, partnership type of love. So he separates the parents from their children. Mm-hmm. He separates lovers. If any of the parents do recognize who their children is, they are punished if they show any favor to their own children.
They try to talk to them.
Yeah.
And it's not just the parent that gets punished. They punish the child who's geez. Like, what?
Yeah.
Who was that?
I thought that person was just being nice to me.
Yeah. Yeah, people would get punished if their parent approached them. And it was like all the way from when they were little, they would separate the boys and girls and not allow them to interact. Again, punishment if there's interaction there. And since they needed people to care for the kids, they had what they would call aunties that would be women that were the caretakers of the children.
Yeah. Yeah, and then work life would start as young as 6 or 7 for a kid. They would go into their 16 hours of a day of hard labor. That's crazy.
I love hard labor. Like, that's all I've ever wanted to do.
Rachel's rubbing her nipples. And if anybody did ever try to escape, men with guns and dogs would circle the colony. They would chase down the person trying to escape. Mm-hmm. That person would be bitten by the dogs. They'd be electrocuted. Mm-hmm. They'd be drugged. Like, it, yeah.
And he had a really good relationship with the government and with the local police. So, like,
Rachel's still rubbing her nose.
So at one point, there was a young boy that did escape. And he managed to be, like, hiding out in some people's homes. But somehow the word got out that that's where he was. And the police went and fetched him from there and took him back to the colony.
Wow.
So then from there on out, during the day, he had to wear red clothing to make him really, like, stand out. And during the night, he had to wear completely white clothing, once wow. again, to make him more visible. And he had special shoes where they carved shapes into the bottom so that when he left tracks, they would be really unique tracks that they could follow.
Jeez.
And they would, like, completely lock him up in a room with just no contact from anyone. And, yeah.
Wow.
Not great things yeah. going on there.
Not great at all. I love these designations the different age groups would get. So for boys, from 0 to 5, you were
babies.
The babies.
You're the babies.
From 6 to 14, you were the wedges.
Just wedged right in there.
Yeah.
I think that was his favorite age too.
Oh.
Like it seemed
you have to
like
say
it.
That?
No,
it is. You're right. From 15 to 30, you are the Army of Salvation.
Not the Salvation, but the Army of
Salvation. From 30 to 50, you are the Elder Servants. Can you imagine? We would be elders right now, all of us.
I mean, yeah, we're all pretty old.
Shut up, I hate you. And from 50 plus, you are the Komolos?
Komolos, which Komolos. Doesn't have a direct translation yeah. they said, so...
For girls, 0 to 5, you are the babies.
0 to 6.
Oh, 6, yeah.
6 to 14, you're the dragons.
So random. And what could be better than a dragon? But 15 to 30, you're a field mouse. What?
The weird transition there, the taking away of power really stands out. After that, Then
this one's the most creative.
35 to 50, you are part of the women's group. But even better, after 50, you are part of the grannies.
Aww. You are a granny at 50 years of age. That's terrible.
Those grannies.
Hey, granny. Yeah. I can't wait to start calling you a granny in 12 years.
I'm looking forward to it so much. But yeah, like, a lot of the separation, it really was in order to stop any of that building of community that wasn't reliant upon him. And we see this in so many different cults all the time.
Yeah.
Like, And I don't even, like, for a while it seemed like there weren't even, like, tons of babies being had because he wasn't letting relationships happen on site. And so a lot of the young people coming in were actually being taken from the local people. Like, they built a hospital there under the guise of being able to, you know, help. And so young children would go into the hospital and never be seen again, not because they died, but because the colony, like, decided to keep them for their own.
Yeah. And what's scary about this is, again, his control, and this is something we see even in present-day, like, Amazon, where basically everybody tattled on each other. Mm-hmm. So at the dinner that night, I could write on a piece of paper that Rachel has sinned. But it's anonymous, so Rachel doesn't know. You don't know I did it. You don't know.
Who would say this? Everyone knows I'm not a sinner.
So then that night, usually Paul, but somebody would get up front and say, Rachel.
Yes?
You have been called a sinner. What have you done? Tell us.
I had lustful thoughts and I touched myself. I mean, this is
must be Saturday.
Must be Saturday.
Yeah, so people were known to just, like, pull anything out of their ass just to kind of save themselves from, you know, further ridicule or being stood out.
Yeah.
So,
and a lot of the times when Paul would take time aside with people, especially the young boys, he would, like, hear their intimate confessions at this time.
No.
Like, he would want them to tell them, like, especially if any of them involved sexual transgressions. Actually, one of the stories that they talked about in the docuseries was how he would pit boys against each other because he had kind of, like, spent his time, like, grooming them, but only he was supposed to be able to benefit from that. And then he found out, like, maybe that two boys did something together, so then he would take them and make them fight each other with boxing gloves and, like, beat each other until one of them fell down.
That's crazy.
Yes. Yeah. And he started them young, like, with the, like, really, like, kind of 0 to 6. Like, he maybe wasn't doing the more sexual things with them, but he was getting them ready. He would do things where he would shower them, where he would bathe them, and then take them and have them sit on his lap while he, like, talked with them and maybe tickled them.
See, and that's why he was jealous of Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Santa gets that perk.
He doesn't have to force it.
Yeah. Like, they want
this
to
is
do
so
that.
Bad.
It is very bad. and it so later, when he would take it further with the boys, they would think that this was normal. They wouldn't think anything was unusual because he has spent years kind of getting them ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
So disgusting. Oh my God.
Should I tell the Santa Claus story?
Oh,
again?
No. Never again.
But it's funny. He shot Santa Claus.
No. Broke hearts everywhere.
Asshole. I just wanted to see the kids' reaction to it.
I know.
Like Santa,
like,
and then, like,
screaming,
oh,
crying.
Yeah.
So, Pinochet.
Everyone in South America needs a good dictator. And that is where Pinochet comes in.
Yes. And he becomes friends with Paul. They kind of have a little understanding going on.
An arrangement. One might say.
You have somebody you want to disappear, Pinochet? I've got a farm.
Yeah. And I will say, because Pinochet, he wasn't elected through the democratic process the way the Marxists were. There was a big kind of coup that overthrew a democratic election and said they don't care what the people want. Now Pinochet is in power. And because of that, there were a lot of people that had actually, like, voted for that previous government, and that were very supportive of that Communist Party. And these were the people that started to disappear, that all of a sudden would be taken in the middle of the night, like kind of a hood over their head, thrown in a bus and driven out past the city into the wilderness.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which we saw in Colonia.
Yeah. So then Emma Watson had to go save him.
Mm-hmm. As she does often.
She got out her wand and she said, Expelliarmus.
Yes. She took a little Polyjuice potion.
Turned it's not right in there.
If only she had that during the movie.
I know.
Only. But yeah, so one of the things that I heard a lot about was the potato cellar.
Uh-oh.
Did you guys hear about the potato cellar? Mm-hmm. It also had, like, other names. Let's see what here. In German, I think it was the Kartoffel cellar. I'm saying that terribly wrong. And then there was also a different name in Spanish that I heard at one point. But this was an underground cellar area that was, like, under reinforced concrete up above, and this is where the torturing would happen. So they brought in these people that they considered dissidents and enemies of the people, and they would torture them. They would hook them up to electric shock. They would beat them. There was one guy that had, like, a helmet over his head that, like, did electric shock, and at one point when it fell aside, he actually saw Paul Schaefer.
Yeah,
so he was
there
and part of this torturing that was going on.
Well, there's even one, Alan, I'm sorry, but I had to hear this, so you do too, where apparently they inserted a rod into a man's penis.
Oh.
And electrocuted him.
Okay.
From inside.
Okay. Wow.
Should I tell the Santa Claus story?
It's about time to tell that. But yeah, there was a lot of torture because they were trying to get the names of other followers of the party, and also just kind of destroy this party as a whole and make sure that there was no way that they could get back in power. And some people did get returned home afterwards. But there were a lot of people that disappeared after.
Yeah.
Like, I think over 1,000 people disappeared during the time of Pinochet's reign, which was a long time. What was that from?
It was, I have this written down.
73.
To, like, 2000.
No, 61.
Oh, no, 61, no. 61 was the start of the colony.
Pinochet, sorry. 73 to 1985.
To 85.
And just to add insult to injury, a lot of these people who went missing, their bodies were put into a mass grave, which in the 70s, Schaefer ordered that the graves be dug up and the bodies were either thrown in the sea or burned. So they didn't even get that final resting place.
Yeah. And there, because of that, there's a lot of people that do not know for sure what happened to their family members. Mm-hmm. There are people that are still looking for answers to that. And while it's very easy to say, like, well, obviously it's likely that they're gone, like, that is never going to sit right when it was someone you loved, and to have nothing left of them and have it just be a big question mark is terrible.
Yeah.
Why?
So, in the movie, Colonia, the main guy, he got tortured, but he also, like, ended up in the commune itself. Like, did you guys, in the research, see that happen at all? Or is that just, like, a fluke in the movie? Because, like, I don't know how you could, like, still stay there or, like, after all the torturing, just kind of, like, you know?
Yeah, from what I saw, I didn't really see any interviews from a person that started as being someone that was there as, like, a prisoner being tortured to them being part of it.
Yeah.
But, like, a lot of the colony members themselves were tortured on some level, especially the boys. And then that was even sometimes almost made as a way to break their spirit and make them dependent upon the colony. And so it never ceases to amaze me the way that people can compartmentalize and not, like, see an issue with the stuff mm-hmm. that they're doing. And that was crazy because some of the people that I saw in this Netflix series, you, like, kind of grow to like them. But then at the same time, they ended up participating in this.
That's messed up.
They were part of it.
Yeah. And I hate to say it, but I'm going to say it. When Chile took on more of a democracy in the 90s, after the 17 years under Pinochet, the far right is what was kind of protecting Colonia Dignidad.
That's not a surprise.
I know it's not a surprise.
Why do you hate to say that? That is obvious fact.
No, I hate to say it because we see the same things over and over in America, and it's happening elsewhere too. Yeah, because the far right was warning them, like, hey, you're going to get raided. Or, hey, this is going to happen. So they had time to, like, clean up their acts.
Yeah, and it's so crazy how in the documentary they show... There was a lot of video footage that was taken of the colony, like, being, like, a Bavarian town where people would come and visit it to see shows put on. Yeah.
It's like a tourist attraction.
Tourist attraction, mm-hmm. like, with singing and dancing in their little drindles. Mm-hmm. There are definitely videos where they're like, look at these healthy, happy little boys. This is what it's like to be a man. And
a dragon.
Oh, my goodness. And it just looks so happy, and it looks idyllic. It's like basically Sound of Music. But then what's going on in the meantime is all this torture and this sexual abuse of children and the loss of human rights everywhere is horrible.
Yeah. And luckily, with the democracy taking over, the Chileans started looking at Colony of Dignity different. They started seeing it as, this place is evil. We don't like this place. So in 1996, the sex abuse charges came up against Schaefer once again. And he managed to hide for 9 years until 2005.
He's very good at hiding.
He's very good at hiding.
He was like, oh, let me just hop over to Argentina for a bit.
Yeah, and he hid in, like, a farm in Argentina. So they did find him. A reporter and a lawyer actually found him in 2005. They found where he was hiding. He got brought in by the authorities along with 26 other cult members. Mm-hmm. And he was sentenced to, this is crazy, just 20 years of prison. Which by that time, like, that's life.
He was 88 at the time.
He's
going
to die soon.
Yeah. But 2004?
Yeah.
Like, this stuff was happening. Yeah. He started the sexual abuse even earlier, but then, like, these atrocities, this torturing of people was happening in, like, the 70s a lot. And 2004...
I know, and it, like, to me, this almost isn't justice, because he got to do this to so many little boys for so long that by the time he was about 84 when they took him in, because he died at 88 in 2010, mm-hmm. he died of a heart ailment. So, like, this really wasn't what he was in prison for 4 years for a lifetime of being terrible and messing up all these people's lives.
Yeah. And I'm really curious about what his prison looked like, because the prison that you saw for some of the people in the Netflix documentary, it like, they have their own apartments.
Oh,
wow. And, like, honestly, I do feel like their other places do prison better. Honestly, our prison system needs reform, and if we're looking to help people to return as citizens, we need to approach it from a way that supports them in getting their back on their feet instead of a system that, like, discourages that, so they'll come back and be incarcerated again. So I can definitely see how it's really good to have prisons that are like this. You're not in a cell necessarily, but you are in, like, a room that looks apartment-like. But at the same time, it's just like, wow, these people brutally tortured people.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the ones that they were talking to were also completely brainwashed. Mm-hmm. Completely brainwashed. And they had this guy's daughter talking with him, and she's like, does it make you feel sad that you did this? And he's just like, I mean, I don't know what to think. It's just what you did. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
But also, he spent so many years under that. This isn't someone that was in a cult for a couple years. This guy was one of the originals from even before they came over to Chile.
Oh.
Up until 2004. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. So this left us with a great feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Deutschland, Deutschland, Deutschland.
Oh, wow.
That's the country for me.
So, yeah. And then after Paul Schaefer got taken away from the colony, well, he fled from the colony for legal reasons. But this is kind of, like, weird, kind of beautiful in a way that the colony now is Via Baviera.
Like, so the Bavarian village.
Yeah.
The Bavarian village you mentioned, but a lot of people working there are ex-colony members. And yeah. What they do is, like, you guys talked about a little, you can go stay there in a hotel, yeah. Or you can go, like, be served by ex-members.
Yeah.
So I think it's,
but now,
like,
they're free to leave.
They're free.
And come back. If they have children, they get to keep them.
Mm-hmm.
They can have relationships where they can have children.
It's just, in a way, it's kind of sad that a lot of them had nothing else that they felt they could do but stay.
Yeah.
But it is beautiful that they could take something so dark and hate-filled and turn it into something light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't know, would you want to go there?
Well, I think the sad part is that they don't even acknowledge the history and, like, the dark side of it. Mm-hmm. Like, just, like, any memorial to, like, those who have passed.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like that would be a lot more nice. Like, when you see the people talking about it, like the people that are in charge of it now, who were children of some of the people that were arrested, like the woman mm-hmm. that was talking to her father is now one of the leaders. They definitely acknowledge what happened
yeah.
there. But it's interesting that there isn't some sort of kind of monument, like that it's... Like, that would be, to me... Like, if you were going to, like, a solvang place that was put on top of, what's the place where they, like, if solvang was on top of Manzanar, that is what that feels like
yeah.
to me. Like, you're going to a place where people's human rights were stripped from them.
Yeah.
But now you're going there as a tourist attraction.
Yeah. Because you're literally, like, over a bunch of tunnels that were torturing people.
Yeah.
Like, you probably might not even know
from
that.
Where mass graves were located
yeah,
before
yeah.
the bodies were removed and burned
yeah.
or attempted to burn. They're like, let's use this fire. Oh no, this isn't with wood. Oh no, it's not hot enough to melt everyone. Let's get some napalm.
Yeah.
For real. That's how it went.
Well, I guess that answered my question.
Would you show up though in a Santa Claus outfit?
What?
On the river. On a raft.
All the waiters just start crying.
Oh no.
And we know Germans love Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Like the German Christmas markets, it's a big thing.
Mm-hmm. It's a big thing. I just love that story so much. Shot Santa.
Oh my goodness.
So, should we go through our cabos?
Sure.
Sure.
Would you say there was a charismatic leader?
I mm-hmm. think so. I don't understand it, but yes.
Yeah, I don't understand. Alienation, we talked about.
Yeah.
Very alienated, couldn't leave.
Yeah.
They built their own wall.
Well, even like a lot of them were German, so even if they were to escape, like, they would have nowhere to go to. They don't know how to speak.
Yeah. Sure. I didn't think
you know,
about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he forced them to speak German
mm-hmm.
in Chile. So, yeah, once mm-hmm. even if they leave, they don't know the language.
Yeah.
Though I will say Chile did have a lot of Germans because
mm-hmm.
due to the dictatorship and all that, it was like a safe haven.
That's
for,
true.
Yeah.
Especially for people that were wanted for war crimes during World War II.
Mm-hmm. How about a belief system?
Yeah, he believed that he was godlike.
Love me.
Mm-hmm. He believed in the Bible in the worst possible way.
Yeah. I still can't believe that some of the parents were like, oh, good, he took my son to rape. My son was chosen by God. Like, that's just... At what point? Sorry.
Yeah.
Sense of community. Well, this was a commune.
Yeah. And they had those really nice videos of them all frolicking in front of the... not the Alps. The Andes Mountains. So, like, very communal.
Very communal. Well, great. So that's a Colony of Dignity. You can also
100%
watch...
100%
a cult. A cult. 100% a cult. You could watch on Netflix. What was the show?
Colonia Dignidad, something sect, Sinister Sect.
Okay. Or on Pluto TV, which is a free app. You just have to be okay watching commercials. You can watch Colonia.
Which is a thriller.
Kind of, I guess. You'd say it's a thriller. Like, it's not a bad movie. But
a historical thriller.
A historical thriller. And you get to kind of get an idea of what life in the colony was like through the fictional story.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, it's Emma Watson.
Who is just wonderful.
I told my sister, who is a lesbian and who has a crush on Emma Watson, that we are watching your ex-girlfriend be tortured right now, and she's like, I never broke up with Emma.
I'll have you know. We are still very happy together.
Right. Even though I've never met her. So great. So we will keep working on the Zendik interview. It's looking good, but I won't promise anything. So next week you may or may not get Zendik.
Yeah, maybe not next week, but we're working on the interview. So, like, maybe it'll be in 2 episodes' time or something.
So we'll let you know next episode what you get, and you'll like it.
Yeah. You will like it.
You will like it.
You'll be happy. And if you don't, we'll electrocute you. No? No? It's not acceptable?
Too far. This is awkward. Uh-huh. Let's kick her off the show.
Oh. Probably should.
Can you dress up in a Santa Claus outfit
first? That's the only way I will go.
That's the only way. On a raft, in a pool. We're going to be at
Vicky's
tomorrow.
House? Yeah, Vicky's house. In my... Santa Claus.
We are seeing Victoria tomorrow.
Yeah.
So if you do get bored in the next 2 weeks waiting for our next episode, which may or may not be Zendik, you can find me on Solving for X, where we're rewatching the X-Men cartoon, the greatest cartoon ever.
Woo! And you can find me on A Real Bodice Ripper, a podcast about the problematic nature of romance novels.
And if you need some cheering up after this episode, you can listen to the Marvelous Galaxy of Disney, where we talk about everything under the Disney umbrella every week.
And if you want more Disney, you could check out magichavoc.threadless.com or go to our Instagram and go to the link tree to find my Disney-inspired shirts.
Desire me.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.
And it may or may not be.